Hey, Dave.
Hey, Matt, what's up?
Not much, doing well. Joining us, for those of you who are not familiar with him, is Dave Weigel, a reporter for the Washington Independent and a contributor to Reason. Thank you for filling in for Bill Scherr today.
Thanks a lot for having me on. Appreciate it.
Absolutely. And Dave, for those of you who don't know him, he is not a liberal per se or at all, but he is a very insightful political reporter. And we appreciate you being here today.
Oh, no, thanks. Yeah, and we see each other around town a lot. I mean, not only am I not a liberal reporter, but we're both allowed into the same conservative events and covens and sacrifices
right.
and all that kind of good stuff.
Dave knows the secret handshakes from time to time. you covered the Right Online Conference and the Networks Nation in Pittsburgh while you were there, and very much a keen and insightful reporter. So let's start off with Tim Pawlenty. We were both on a conference call with him today.
Right.
And Pawlenty, it's interesting because the thing that didn't get much play is that Pawlenty has surrounded himself with a great online media team. He's got Patrick Ruffini and Mindy Finn, who are both really top-notch at what they do. But I think perhaps even more importantly is the blogger outreach people. He's gotten Liz Mayer and Patrick Hines. And Hines was the guy behind John McCain. I've said it before, and I'll say it again. I think McCain overperformed in terms of blogger outreach. And what I mean by that is, if you look at what conservative bloggers should have thought about John McCain based on his record and his sort of history of having fights with conservatives, he got pretty darn good coverage. And I think, Dave, I think a lot of this has to do with the outreach that Patrick Hines did with John McCain.
Yeah, I think you can even see the real feelings of conservatives in the comment sections of these blogs. I remember you'd see Ed Morrissey at Hot Air, and maybe he was still at Captain Quarters back then, reflecting on a McCain conference call, and everyone in the crowd piling on him. I think he did overperform. There's a story I think of that wasn't related to McCain. It was the Democrats did some of this when they took the House. There's a very good book about the 2006 election called The Thumpin', where Bill Burton, who now works for the White House, was working for the DCCC on House races.
Yeah.
And just invited liberal bloggers who were every day just pounding and piling on the Democratic candidates on Rahm Emanuel. They're still doing that. Some of the same people are still attacking Rahm Emanuel. And they just said once they got him on the phone, they just kind of turned into pussycats, and they were so excited the access they were getting.
Yeah.
That they didn't even ask hard questions, and Burton just hangs up the phone. He's like, those were the guys? Like, these guys and he used some expletive that I can't remember and won't repeat. But same thing with McCain. Like, people who should have hated McCain, once they just had that little bit of the aura you can get over the phone as opposed to riding on his expensive bus, they melted for him.
I actually got to ride on his expensive bus and be a part of a ton of conference calls. I wrote positive things about him. I wrote negative things about him. But one of the things, Dave, that he did was, if you wrote something negative about him, or even if you asked him a tough question, they kept inviting you back. They didn't, exile you. They didn't take you off the list. And that wasn't the case with some of the other campaigns. But with McCain, you know, whether or not you agreed with him philosophically, he was really nice on the phone and funny. And, he would harass bloggers in that sort of irascible way that he does.
Yeah.
But I think that bloggers, at the end of the day, conservative bloggers liked him and appreciated the access. And I'm predicting that Tim Pawlenty may be off to a big start here. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if he doesn't start. I mean, if he's going to follow them, judging by the conference call today where he announced the formation of his PAC and the team that he's surrounded himself with, he might be playing this McCain. You know, again, Pawlenty is not necessarily the most conservative candidate. I look for him to overperform with bloggers as well.
Yeah. In the call today, he was a little bit more scripted than McCain usually would be. I mean, McCain is almost sui generis because when he would do a real-life town hall, if there was a plant in the audience, one of those guys wearing a dolphin suit or something, he would call in the guy first. Pawlenty was a little bit more scripted, but I went out on a limb when I saw Pawlenty at the Values Voter Summit a couple weeks ago in D.C., James Dobson Group, and I just saw him speak and saw him afterward and said, wow, that guy's going to win the Iowa caucuses.
Why was that?
Well, I'm not as big a believer in the primacy of bloggers. I think they're important. I think talk radio did more. It's more on the, I think, on the left where they don't have the talk radio experience that blogs are super, super influential.
Right.
But the skills that you need to win over skeptical, wonky bloggers or even just political junkie bloggers are the ones you have in conversation. And you have nothing in the trail in Iowa, nothing but small town hall meetings and conversations. And Pawlenty is really good at that. I mean, that might come out across more on those calls. And that's something, I guess, Huckabee's pretty good at it, too. He's a little bit more glib.
Right.
But, you know, Mitt Romney's never been very good at. And if this is what you're talking about, if Pawlenty just keeps treating these people or at least, you know, if they're not kingmakers, they're at least, yeah, they have a tiny crown.
And in a Republican primary, Dave, too, I have to say, I mean, conservative bloggers, if they are ever important, it is during a Republican primary. That is when...
Yeah, no, totally.
And here's why. It's not that they're important. It's the perception that they're important. It's that when the New York Times or the Washington Post or Fox or whatever talks about them, if they're going to pick up the buzz. I mean, you know, I'm on Twitter. I'm followed by, you know, some mainstream media people. So what happens in the blogs can filter up into the mainstream media. So not only are we talking to conservative grassroots voters who are more likely to vote in primaries, but there's also the potential that the buzz generated from the blogs can trickle up, in this case, to the mainstream media. And, I mean, when I look back at the 08 campaign, you know, just to quickly go through my, and I'd love to hear your take too, but Rudy Giuliani was aloof. His team was great at surrogates. I mean, I got to interview Ted Olson and a lot of people who were Rudy supporters, never got to talk to Rudy.
Yeah.
He would be whisked right past me at events, could never get to him. I think that...
I know for a fact he lost support because of that, because my friend Phil Klein, the American Spectator,
Phil
was a
Clean.
Very sympathetic
Phil
Rudy.
Phil Clean, as we call him.
Yeah, Phil Clean is not Pawlenty. Some nice person on the call called him. He's a New Yorker, and he was really pro Rudy. And
right.
I remember he was trying to write a profile of Rudy and talk about health. Was it healthcare? He had some issue he wanted to talk about for months and months, and they just held him at arm's length. And finally, over Thanksgiving, they invited him to ride the bus in New Hampshire, and all he got was a couple minutes of a three-way interview with people, and
right.
He was furious. And here's a guy. You know, Phil Klein is not the most powerful reporter in the world, but he writes for the American Spectator, and it's not a good idea if you're Republican to annoy the American Spectator because, you know, Rush Limbaugh reads it and quotes
right.
it on the air.
Exactly.
You know, maybe I don't agree with you quite as much about blogs, but, you know, we know that if Pawlenty has Patrick Ruffini, we know Ruffini's reading these political articles and what have you, and we know that there's a conversation happening in the Republican base that these guys are part of, and Rudy would just slough them off and... You know, McCain wouldn't. Looks like, and it looks like Pawlenty won't, which is smart. Which is, you're right about that.
Right. You know, and Romney. I mean, Romney had some people who were. It seems like he. It was interesting because McCain had a bunch of people, and he would let them on, even if they were critical of him. Romney seemed to have a couple people, like Catherine Lopez, Hugh Hewitt, Dean Barnett, who loved him, and it almost got to the point where. The more good things they wrote about him, I think it had a backlash because, frankly, other bloggers, and they would get exclusives sometimes or special access.
Yeah.
And I'm a believer in giving reporters and bloggers exclusives, but there's also a backlash to it. I mean, there's people get jealous or, oh, here we go again, you know. So, you know, I think it's somewhat of a double-edged sword, but I think McCain did it right. I think that he overperformed with conservative bloggers compared to where they should have been based on ideology. And if it looks like Pawlenty might be following a similar strategy. Now, there is some pushback. Eric Erickson today tweeted, "Dear Tim Pawlenty, I don't care about your 2012 aspirations right now. I'm focused on 2010, but thanks for the call and the good luck." That was before the conference call. I asked Pawlenty about that. He actually had a good answer to it and said he's focused on 2010 and 2009 too. But then Andy Roth from the Conservative Club for Growth tweeted out later today, you know, why are there so many Pawlenty fans on the right? I don't get it. S-chip, minimum wage hike, cap and trade. Mm-hmm. And then Eric Erickson, again, a few minutes later, responded with a quote from Pawlenty in 2006, quote, "The era of small government is over. Government has to be more positive and more aggressive." So
yeah, Pawlenty gave a lot of interviews after 2006 because he won the governorship He basically only won because the Democrat called a reporter a whore at the last minute, and they didn't play in Minnesota, even though I guess they elected Al Franken. But he only won on a squeaker, so there is a big record of him just opening up to reporters about how the Republican Party had failed and how they were the party of the country club and not Sam's Club.
Right.
But, you know, that's the kind of thing that I think you'll get bloggers to agree with. That's the thing. If you win those opinion leaders first,
right,
and they convince their friends and their commenters that what he meant was this, I think he can get past that. It's not like Romney with years of video flip-flops and McCain with like voting against Bush tax cuts and what have you.
Well, I will say this, and I agree with you in a sense that I think when you get out there early like he's doing now, the danger is you get the attacks early. But I think the benefit to that is overwhelming, that maybe you get them out of the way, and personal relationships and other things can overcome the attacks. So my gut is that, I mean, Pawlenty, if what we see today is in any indication, I mean, they could fall off, you know. I think Fred Thompson had all this
excitement.
Yeah, I was
going to bring up Fred Thompson.
And then he just sort of didn't go anywhere. But if Pawlenty sort of continues what he started today, I think it would be very formidable. So what's your take, though? I mean, how do you, just to sort of wrap up the Pawlenty thing, you were on the call today. What was your overall sort of thought on it?
Well, I did think he was more scripted than I know he can be, because I've seen him work a small room and be really jokey. And one weird thing he does that'll probably get, and this is one thing that might help him out, he tells lots of jokes about how hot his wife is.
Well, she is smoking hot.
He's telling the truth, but this is the kind of thing that'll be the subject of some New York Times story or a Post-style section story. And if he has the bloggers on his side, he might win him over. But in this, he was a little bit robotic and...
I mean, don't get me wrong, she's no Jerry Thompson, but yeah, I mean, there's something to be proud of there.
He definitely like can. He was less fun than I know he can be.
Yeah.
But because I know he can do that, I was thinking ahead to future conference calls, and he can totally win over. The problem is there's such a proliferation of these people. I mean, I'd suggest if he was doing this, if he also really got active on his Twitter account and started churning this stuff out. Yeah, you'll get the occasional one-day story that Tim Pawlenty tweeted something stupid, but in general, he'll build, like McCain has, a million-person Twitter list.
And it has to be authentic. It can't be a staffer.
Yeah.
It can't be...
I know he can do that, so I want to see him do more of that.
The other thing is, and I'm happy to see he cut the mullet, because just as you cannot become president with a mustache, today you cannot become president with a mullet. Okay, so I mentioned the Club for Growth's Andy Roth, so that's a good segue, I think, maybe into talking about this New York 23 race. Essentially, we've got a special election, I think November 3rd, in upstate New York. Yeah. The problem is there's a Republican candidate who's very liberal, there's a Conservative Party candidate, and there's a Democrat. Obviously, the Republican establishment wants the Republican to win. But big-time groups like the Club for Growth, Susan B. Anthony List, Concerned Women for America, have signed on, and they're backing the conservative candidate. And the blogs are now a-Twitter about this. In fact, Eric Erickson had a big the Drudge siren headline going today.
Can a blog be a-Twitter? That sounds like a cat mooing or something. But I know what you mean.
And he said,
definitely it picked up steam on the blogs today.
The blogs were a Twitter, and he said, House Republican leadership aligns with Acorn support, pro-gay marriage, pro-abortion, pro-big government Acorn-endorsed candidate. And, man, that's got to be a search engine optimization trick there.
He just needs to add in Kardashian and
Hannah Giles, perhaps, in bathing suit would drive up the traffic.
Acorn sex tape would drive it up, yeah.
But basically he says, in a disappointing sign, that the House Republican leadership has not earned and does not deserve to retake the majority in the House of Representatives. A bunch of people are confirming for me today that the House GOP has decided to sign on with Acorn and endorse Didis Scozafava, who is the liberal Republican.
Got it right. Yeah, they did. I mean, this is a real cleavage between the Republican Party that wants to put John Boehner in the Speaker's chair at some point, and the base that really believe this stuff. Republicans don't disbelieve this stuff, but I think they're quicker to drop all the hardcore principles if they think they have a candidate who can win. And for that, I would point you to the John McCain nomination 2008. He's right. They would love for this Republican to hold the seat so that on November 4th, they can celebrate Republican Party comeback in New York. New York, New Jersey, and Virginia, even though this is a seat they had in New York already.
Right.
A pretty conservative Republican who joined the Obama administration. But if they lose it to a Democrat, especially if they end up losing one of these other governor's races, then this is months and months of possible momentum that they just squandered. It really hurt them. They know this. They were going
to
win the New York 20 race and didn't, that was a political junkie story maybe, but that trickled down to the coverage of the Republican Party as a whole.
But part of the problem is in New York 20, they picked a liberal to run. Conservatives never liked him. And again, here we have another backroom deal. I mean, part of the problem isn't that she's a hardcore liberal Republican, but it's the fact that it was done not by a primary, not even by a convention, but a bunch of backroom, smoke-filled room, sort of political machine type operatives picked her. And so I think that's sort of the subtext of this story. That's the reason that a lot of people, I think, are skeptical.
Well, and they would have an advantage over the Democrats because the Democrats did the same thing and picked a guy who I don't think was a registered Democrat before he ran, who is not committed to supporting the public option, which is just, a heresy if you're a liberal blogger. So it's not like the Democrats were going to light the world on fire with their guy. The only way, but if they only need to win 40% of the vote to take the seat, then it really matters if the Republicans are depressed and don't like their candidate.
Absolutely, and I think it's going to be. I mean, man, this thing could be ugly, and again, you almost hate to see this happen. Republicans should be fighting Acorn and Nancy Pelosi and Barack Obama. They should not be fighting each other. And you have a potential now split for, conservative bloggers and groups like the Club for Growth are going to be very important going into the midterm elections. And now we have them fighting essentially the establishment Republican, the NRCC. Some feelings could be hurt. I'm sure everyone's going to get over this and focus on winning in 2010, but it is not a good thing probably if you're a Republican. This could have been easier, but a variety of circumstances have made this happen.
Is this another example of the Club for Growth screwing things up? Because Republicans lost a lot of elections recently for a lot of reasons, but the Club for Growth backed a candidate in 2008 who ended up losing the general election. I think the most obvious one is they ousted Wayne Gilchrist, who was a congressman in Maryland, and they're like, we can get a more conservative congressman in there. So they beat him in the primary with a state senator.
Well, if Michael Steele and Newt Gingrich hadn't endorsed Gilchrist in the primary, and then Gilchrist comes out and endorses the Democrat, and 2008 was a horrible year. I mean, it was a perfect storm. I don't fault the Club for Growth, and here's my take, Dave.
Okay.
We all have a role to play. As a blogger, I have a role to play, which is different than if I was a political operative at the NRCC. And I don't fault, fish for swimming. I don't fault Bill Clinton for loving chicks. And I don't fault the Republican Party for trying to elect Republicans. And I don't fault the Club for Growth for trying to elect fiscally conservative free marketers. That is their job. And I think that the world is a better place because of that. And I think that sometimes you try and there's unintended consequences, but I think they're making the right decision here, and I think that they just got to be what they are. We've already got the NRCC. We don't need another group that's going to toe the party line. We don't need another group who's going to just support Republicans because they have an R. We've got them. They're called the NRCC.
But you're also prioritizing the Club for Growth donors over. Yeah, these people were in a smoke-filled room, but the people who chose this candidate know the district. And for one, let's talk, forget about the political judgment here. You're saying that conservative donors and bloggers around the country should come in as white knights and fix the mistakes made by these local Republicans who've been in this district winning elections for decades and decades.
I think a couple things. Number one, I do think the circumstances are partially fueling this. Part of the circumstances are that it was a sort of backroom deal. I think that if primary voters or even a convention had nominated her, there's a better argument of electability. Like, hey, she's not my, you know, brand of vodka or whatever, but they picked her. But it's a little bit undemocratic the way it was done. But the other thing is just how egregious her record is. I mean, if she was a Tim Pawlenty or a Mitt Romney, maybe not as conservative as I might like, but look, she fits Massachusetts or she fits Minnesota, that's fine. But this lady is so liberal that it really is almost Nancy Pelosi territory, which, by the way, the Club for Growth put out an ad today. I put it up on Town Hall. It's on the blogs. They do have the potential to elect somebody or make a big difference, make a big splash. And they do compare. I think they compare her to Pelosi, maybe.
They compare her to Patterson, the governor who no one likes. I mean, this is a district where Obama is still very popular.
Yeah.
So they compare her to Patterson, and they compare the Democrat to Pelosi. Yeah.
So it's
factual. It's the Republicans is in the Assembly and supported these Patterson tax increases, and the Democrat, if elected, will vote for Pelosi for Speaker. So it's factual. But yeah, that's how they go at her.
So, in any event, this is going to be interesting to watch. We'll closely follow it here at TWIB. I think it's one of those things. It's like, it's almost like a football game. Like at the end of the Redskins-Lions game last week, I think you should have thrown the ball into the end zone and you take your chances. But Zorn instead does this weak little, like, lateral thing. But it's the kind of thing that if it fails, you're an idiot, and if it works, you're a genius, you know?
Well, this is also a difference between the Club for Growth and Blogger base and the Republican Party. This actually is something that seems obvious but isn't. The Republican base they would like to win elections, but when they say we want the party to return to its roots, they really mean it.
Right.
Like, they're not having it. Yeah, it's too bad to be in opposition, but have you ever encountered a conservative blogger? Maybe you've encountered one, but who said, boy, I wish McCain was president. They wish Obama wasn't, but it's not like they're broken up about losing that election.
When even Glenn Beck even said that he thinks maybe we're better off with Obama.
Yeah, and I think Republicans will say that.
I tend to disagree with that, but...
Well, Republicans will say that to mollify the base and to get money, but they don't believe it. I mean, Boehner would be fine. If you elected 40 Scova... liberal Republicans, that's how I'll get out of that trap. If you elected 40 of them and he became Speaker, he'd be fine. If he lost a bunch of votes, whatever, he'd be in power.
Yeah.
But the thing is, if he was in power, then you wouldn't, you know, in the House, you basically have a diktat, and he'd be able to pass, like, an Obama impeachment resolution on day one,
right.
Probably. I mean, you get, like, total, do you want total control first, or do you want to burrow and wait for a few cycles? And the Democrats kind of got both of this, depending on what district they were in. They had people mm-hmm. who they forced, Rahm Emanuel just force-fed into the electorate, like Heath Shuler. But then
right.
they had people who the liberal base donated to and elected, like Jerry McNary in California.
Right.
I think Rahm had a conservative Democrat, and this liberal guy ended up winning the primary. Same thing, Carol Shea Porter in New Hampshire. Read it all, Michael Barone's almanac. But you know, there are cases where the liberal base blew it for
right.
them, but they didn't. They had some luxury because there was, you know, a lot of room to do
yeah,
this.
Yeah, look, Dave,
I even
sort of agree with this. I mean, I would say that empirically, nationally, conservatives win elections and moderate Republicans don't. And just you look no further than Bob Dole and John McCain to see what happens when you nominate someone who's not a solid conservative. But I think there's a better argument to be made that says, in the states, I mean, you're not, you know, Christy Todd Whitman might be able to win New Jersey, but Tom DeLay is not going to, and Mitt Romney in Massachusetts. So I do think that when it comes to the states, if you're going to make that argument of electability, I think that that's at least I'm more in tune with it if you look at the states as opposed to nationally.
Like, I would agree that this is a free ride for a Club for Growth. I mean, a conservative. They'll always be irritating the Republicans, but if they'll probably win this seat anyway, a Republican or a conservative will probably win the seat. And if they don't, they have another bite at it in 2010 when they probably will win it. So
just the problem is, yeah. you know, the timing and the momentum mm-hmm. and all that. But
yeah, it's bad for the we'll party. But there's people who believe in the news cycle and people who believe in party building, and they're right. not always the same. I think the bloggers are more interested in party building. They hate the news cycle. They don't like it when there's a Republicans lose story, but they didn't eat themselves up over losing New York 20, and I think the National Party did.
Gotcha. Well, let's move on and close out with the big Newsmax story, and you want to set that one up?
Well, right. It's one of those things that blew up on liberal blogs, and I don't think made it that far outside. But now, of course, like when you say liberal blog, you mean also MSNBC, a couple of like the blocks of their night program, and it's that.
I've still got the scars on my back from my performance there last hour. So
was that the one that was auto-tuned, or no? This is a new one.
Okay. No, I was just on defending Michelle Bachmann. So.
This has yet to be auto-tuned.
No, not yet.
So Newsmax.com, which is a really popular conservative site. It's one of those things that's subterranean. If you talk to somebody at Tea Party, they probably have read it. A conservative in D.C. will probably not admit to reading it unless they work for it. So this conservative site has an editor who has been writing columns for John Perry, who's been writing columns for years, I think a decade, and wrote a column about the possibility of a military coup against President Obama. And it was written in this very unconvincing, I'm not saying it should happen or will, I'm not saying my sources have told me it will, but, you know, let's say this guy is hurting America and the military has to honor their orders by overthrowing him. And, Newsmax, get rid of the, unusually for them, they scrub the column. I mean, they've got columns on the site about Barack Obama's birth certificate and everything else.
Yeah.
They get rid of the column.
And it's almost like scrubbing something, it's almost worse than keeping it there, right? I mean, in terms of the kind of coverage you're going to get.
Yeah, no.
It's almost like an admission of guilt or something.
It is, although in the age of internet advertising, you run the danger of somebody who bought an ad on your site cycling through and then asking why. Yeah, so but generally speaking, no, you should never do that. It exists. It'll be cached. You're never going to get rid of it. Tweets can't even be deleted forever. So but it's really Talking Points memo just guns at them, and it got picked up by Huffington Post. I wrote a little thing about it because I noticed the Republican Party had been using Newsmax's email list, if you subscribe to Newsmax, you got an email from our sponsor, the Republican National Committee. So it was example 5030 of the Republican Party in the age of Obama indulging craziness. And yeah, I saw
let
this.
Let me just play devil's advocate, though, Dave.
Yeah.
Putting aside this specific piece, just what about the isn't there something to be said for defending the freedom of writers to be intellectually curious? And again, I don't want to defend this particular piece. Although, I mean, I would say if you literally read his words, I do think he was sort of saying it was almost a fictional thing. Like, what would happen if this happened and this happened? I mean, that doesn't necessarily excuse it. But just in terms of, as a writer, you're a writer, I'm a writer, and certainly liberals, if anybody, should be interested in defending, I mean, for crying out loud, Hollywood is defending Roman Polanski. So something to be said for defending a writer when they write. I mean, it's like a comedian on stage. When you're in the zone, to be able to sort of think creatively. You know, liberals had a movie where there was actually an assassination of President Bush. For crying out loud.
Yeah, the death of a president. Or the
So let me just throw that out, just to play devil's advocate there. I mean, as a writer, you know, do you want to be sort of held to limitations where you can't sort of even game, like, what if this happened? You could potentially write a piece that was, God forbid, what happened if the president was assassinated? What would happen?
Well, I wrote a piece about that movie in 2007.
Yeah,
I think, or 2006 for Reason, probably 2006 for Reason, about how fine it, artists are allowed to do this, and the assassination of a president as a theme has been around for a while. The assassination of a king, regicide, has been a theme for a while, so I'm fine with that as a writer. I mean, the place I come to with this in the Independent, I was interested in why Republican ads were appearing at Newsmax, because, you know, it's something that in the Bush years liberals got scored for. There was a case in 2005 where a African American blogger did a cartoon of Michael Steele in blackface, and he's already black, but it made him look like a minstrel. And Tim Kaine, who was running for governor of Virginia, had an ad and took it off, and Gilliard was really angry at him. I talked to one of his friends, Marcos from Daily Coast, about this, and I was like, look at this Newsmax thing. And he said, yeah, I hate this. Like, I don't want to play this game. I realized that this was played against us, but come on. Like, why aren't you allowed to say things on the Internet? And that was actually where I come from on this. I think, like, my beat at the Independent is the conservative movement and Republicans rebuilding the party. So I end up covering these controversies. But at the same time, I don't think it's a good use of the liberal blogosphere, liberal Internet's time to just cover every controversy and wag their finger and get shocked by it, because they're not.
Yeah, I'll give you a quick example of this. I was on MSNBC today. The person I was up against called Michelle Bachmann crazy during a 3-minute segment. Mm-hmm. And I just made the point that I don't know that sort of rhetoric is healthy in a political debate. So within minutes, someone was on Twitter finding that in 2005 I wrote something where I one time referred to Cindy Sheehan as a crazy lady or something like that. On my personal blog, mattlewis.org, which granted, maybe it's different on national TV, maybe it's different referring to a United States Congresswoman versus Cindy Sheehan. But the point is, they're watching and doggone it, they are Googling what is said and done. Let me ask you this, though, as someone who sort of follows the conservative blogosphere, you know, John Hinckley the other week had this story about WorldNet Daily, and do you see any comparison between WorldNet Daily and Newsmax? Like Newsmax would you put them in the same category?
Newsmax is more mainstream, but they're in the same ballpark. One is a illegal boxing match, and one is like dog fighting. You know, but I think they're in the same category. But again,
that's a great analogy there.
But the John's problem, which I he's a Republican consultant. He's actually he works for Fred Thompson. He's one of the guys who's kind of done over by Thompson deciding to have a really lazy blog strategy. You know, his interest is, as a guy who's conservative and wants Republicans to win things, you shouldn't patronize the fringes of the right. Republican National Committee, don't buy an ad with WorldNet Daily. And this week he didn't say it, but there are people who would say, don't buy one with Newsmax. And that, I think, is a fine thing to suggest. If you want to win, stay away from the fringes. If you're running for governor and you're a Democrat 4 years ago, don't buy an ad on Steve Gilliard's site. Whatever, that makes sense. But like the point of this campaign against Newsmax this week seemed to be, there's all this craziness in America, and this site published it, and then they got rid of it. And I'm like, why waste your time on that? I think really there's a, because the web we work in right now grew up in the Bush era, so liberals had a lot of time to build these institutions, and they've got lots of institutions now. They've got Think Progress, mm-hmm. and the place I work, Washington Independent, Center for Independent Media. They've got Huffington Post. They've got Talking Points Memo, just expands all the time. And they've got things I can't think of right now that are smaller. I guess Greg Sargent's blog, whatever. But they've got all this stuff that came up, and they use it, they're used to springing on every crazy thing. Maybe the point of this is down the road to grab a Republican who indulged in the crazy thing. I understand that, but I think they end up spending a lot of time every day just filling the airways with what the crazy Republican said versus their message. And I don't mean to use that, like, their message in this very Soviet way. I mean, you know, they don't need to just all be talking, reading Organizing for America's talking points. But, you know, there was this blow up about Alan Grayson this week, this congressman from Florida who's very outre and just makes, you know, inflammatory comments all the time. Said the Republican plan on health care is for you to die quickly. And actually, I think the conventional wisdom is that he shouldn't have said that. But you know, I saw that and I was like, I think he got it. If you say a crazy thing, you're not punished. Yeah. You just get to fill the news cycle up. And maybe you can go beyond the pale and be disallowed from polite society, but not really. So
and that's one
like
of those
these liberal media
too, Dave, and yeah, I don't know if you get these, but it's one of the kind of things where I get like an email from the Republican Party or something, like, oh my gosh, look what he said. And they're sending me the YouTube clip. And I'm like, I'm going to put this thing on thinking it's going to be, you know, this amazing story, controversial. And it's like, it's nothing. I mean, yeah, it's an extreme thing to say, but liberals say extreme things like that every day. I didn't know what was so egregious about it.
Yeah, I think the last one
to the other, in light of the fact that there's so much other, you know, stuff like that. So,
But I take it back to there's this liberal media infrastructure now. I think Byron York called it the vast left wing conspiracy, and I'm fine with conspiracy as a non pejorative word. I think that's it. It's not that secret. There's lots of there would be people who try and attack me because they're like this organization you work for took money from Soros at one point. I'm like yeah, so what? I mean they're all pretty obvious about what they're doing.
Yeah,
I took money from Coke too, from the Coke Foundation when I worked for Reason. But it's like, what are they doing? How are they leveraging this stuff without a presidential campaign?
I was just sort of like wiping my nose when you were talking about Coke.
Oh, okay.
Which is not a good thing to do.
No. You weren't trying to signal out there your dealer.
This is KOCH.
The KOCH family.
One of those like baseball things where you're given the signs.
Well, there's lots of obsession with the Cokes though, because they funded some groups. Let me get it right. They funded American Prosperity back in the day, not Freedom Works, because there was a split between the two. But there's this like Think Progress, which gets attacked for taking money from Soros, spends all this time pointing out that this one group that had a Tea Party took some money from Coke. And what's the point? You get this investigative report on MSNBC, I guess. But at the end of the day, people showed up at the rally, and the rally was the story. I mean, you maybe threw like this much doubt on the grassroots nature of it, but there's a lot of that. A lot of the energy on the liberal blogs right now is just, let's all get shocked at this thing that happened. And people have in politics have always had shocking things. In the age of video, there's always shocking video. I mean, I was at this conference this weekend where Trent Franks, the Republican congressman.
That's
from
Arizona, you got to mention in Politico on this.
I was at this conference and talked to Franks. He's one of the guys who's indulged the birther stuff, and I talked to him a little bit about that, but I was just like, really, explain me what you're saying. But the big story thing that came out of it was that he had said, in a very, sort of William Garrison, the Randall Terry sort of way, any president who supports Obama's policies, is a threat and enemy of humanity. So then Democrats got all outraged. He said, enemy of humanity. And I thought, I see that's interesting video, but that's kind of the way politicians have talked forever.
Yeah,
and it's not
have,
something you agree you,
you
agree
can't
that
have panache
he,
nowadays. You cannot be a politician that has panache, because that it just doesn't, it's going to be used against you. So we're just going to have these boring politicians who are always on message.
Yeah, but you're not going to have them. I mean, I think Al Franken has pursued a strategy in Minnesota of not being that out there.
Yeah,
and
it's worked
I've watched the polls in the state, and he's not that much more popular. I think it's either slightly negative or slightly positive.
Meanwhile,
in the same state, Michelle Bachmann's saying, as your debating partner said, crazy things all the time, but she believes them and backs them up, or at least whatever facts she uses, she's like, she doesn't back down from them, and it doesn't
hurt her. Dave, I think you would probably agree with me on this, because I think we have a lot in common in some ways in terms of how we approach writing and blogging.
Mm-hmm.
The problem with cable TV and the problem with this debate even today that I had about Bachmann is that it's a nuanced position. And so just to sort of quickly retell the story, she is concerned about these public schools, part of a provision in the healthcare bill would allow for there to be nurses at these public schools who could refer somebody to an abortion clinic to have an abortion. Not an absurd idea of something that might happen, despite how some people might portray it.
No.
But in MSNBC, David Schuster made the argument that, well, it can't happen. Well, actually, it could happen in a handful of states. There are still a handful of states that do not have parental consent laws. I was trying to make that point, but here's the problem. And I'm not picking on that network. I do like MSNBC. But
I like it too.
This is true of all the networks. That's a nuanced point. It can never be, well, Dave, in some states you're right, but in the District of Columbia and other states. And then the other point is, look, why not just pass an amendment specifically prohibiting, reference to an abortion clinic for an underage girl who might be pregnant.
Well, the secret is they want to leave that open. I mean, this is the secret of Glenn Beck, too, is that Glenn Beck has been successful because he actually has found a few actual witches in his various hunts. And, you know, he took down Van Jones, and it was, after, without retelling that whole story, basically, liberals went after him, and he said, fine, here's the goods, and he got the goods, and for all of the attacks on Glenn Beck, he actually succeeded because he was right about something. I mean, I think this is the thing driving me crazy about Grayson, without dwelling too much on that, is that the way Politico covered Grayson was with a story on a couple of stories, one on hissy fits, and there's lots of hissy fits these days. And I read that and was thinking, well, wait a second. He said that people were dying because they didn't have health care coverage. Is that true? Joe Wilson said illegal immigrants might get health care. Is that true? And that gets lost immediately in the way cable and blogs cover this stuff, but I don't think that it stops voters from going and researching this stuff. Like, I think Grayson will have been successful in getting voters to go and just Google and say, like, oh, how many people are dying because they don't have health care? And Wilson was very successful. I talked to a Republican congressman, on the record, after it happened, because they were getting all these questions from reporters, and they're like, we couldn't get anyone to care about this immigration issue, and now they do because he talked about it.
Same thing's true with the death panels with Palin.
Same thing. Liberals are so smart, and they make fun of her for saying this, and there's endless coverage on this in this new liberal media infrastructure. And then I think a huge portion of the country believes it. Now, yes, some people just don't trust Obama, so they'll believe anything negative about the bill. But this argument got in there because it was extreme, and people talk about extreme things. So the liberals have this idea that they can shame Republicans out of something. The fundraising side, it's because people will go and click and donate to Michelle Bachmann's opponent or whatever if they get angry. Yeah, mm-hmm. I get that. It's easier to get somebody to give money for anger than it is an issue. Look at the Organizing for America's not doing that well right now. In getting people to hand out health care petitions.
Right.
But, the best fundraising day for the Obama campaign was after Sarah Palin's convention speech. So I get why that is. I'm just why is there this huge liberal infrastructure with lots of smart people that is deciding to talk about Bachmann all the time? I understand that one aspect, but not why you guys think it would be effective.
Well, Dave Weigel, pleasure doing this with you, man. You want to give a quick plug for your website and your Twitter feed?
Oh, yeah. It's the Washington Independent. It's part of a network of Center for Independent Media sites, Minnesota Independent, Iowa Independent. And I tweet at Dave Weigel, just at Dave Weigel, my name, on Twitter. So thanks a lot for having me. This was
Dave, thank you.
Yeah.
Always a pleasure talking with you, and our first time on Twib, but great to have you. Always insightful, and hope to have you back soon.
Thanks. Next time we see in person, let's do the secret handshake.
You got it. Thanks, man.
Thanks.